Thank you so much for having me. First of all, I want to thank also Physicians for Human Rights Israel, because this was a very important fact-finding mission. And like everyone else, I have way too much information to discuss, which I probably won't get all of it in, so we'll just do the best we can. I have also no relationships to disclose.
Except to Charles, who's here.
That's right, who's Charles, who's my co-author on this. Also, the people who helped to write the results, and they'll be referenced at the end. So how did this conflict begin in 2014? The 15th of May, two Palestinian teenagers were killed by Israeli sniper fire, and they were using live ammunition in the West Bank during protests and rock throwing of a specific holiday. They did release the autopsy results regarding the fact that the live ammunition had been used the day before the following event, which was when three Israeli teenagers were abducted on 12 June. These Israeli teenagers were actually in the West Bank, and they were returning from religious school. They were at a bus or hitchhiking stop, and they were kidnapped from there. Netanyahu indicated that he had unequivocal proof that this had been done by Hamas and leaders, even though there was really no release of that evidence and no proof. At that time, Israeli Defense Forces initiated what's called Operation Brothers Keeper. And at that point, they were looking for the search of their teens. Hamas at that time denied any involvement. However, a lot of, you know, it was one of those on the shows where they say round up the usual suspects. And everybody was arrested that was involved with Hamas, and they were doing whatever they do to those people. There were also many Palestinians that were injured and killed during these Brothers Keeper events. The bodies were found on the 30th of June in Hebron, and they were close to where they had been kidnapped, and it appeared from their appearance and the decomposition that they had been killed shortly after they were abducted. Then, because of the ongoing violence and because of the killing of the three teenagers, Israelis, IDF started Operation Protective Edge. This was airstrikes that bombarded the Gaza Strip, and that began on 8 July. They then went on to ground invasions, which occurred on the 20th of July, in order to, as they stated, destroy tunnels that were crossing into Israel. On the 3rd of August, after about 50 days, the IDF pulled out most of its forces, and they felt that it had been successful because they destroyed 32 tunnels built by Hamas. Now, how was the impact on the Gaza Strip? More than 2,200 Palestinians were killed. And what was important are a couple things. First of all, over 500 children were killed in this war. 70% of those that were killed were civilians. There were 742 fatalities that came out of only 142 families, and they suffered the loss of three or more family members in individual bombings on residential buildings. The other thing is that more than 11,000 Palestinians were wounded or injured, and I'll show you some of those in a little bit. More than 273 Palestinians were displaced. As of July 31st, about 11% of the population was taking shelter in UNRWA schools. 1.8 million people were affected by loss of water. The infrastructure was completely destroyed. There was no sewage, there was no water supply, and at the time that we came into the country, Gaza had 2 hours of, actually I think it was up to 6 hours of electricity per day, but they never knew when that was going to occur.
Clarify UNRWA schools.
United Nations Relief and Works Agency. Yes, correct. I looked at it before I came. Dedicated to Palestinian relief. 138 schools were damaged. Now, on the impact side on Israel, you can see that 73 Israelis were killed in the bombs that occurred across the border. 67 of those were soldiers. 6 were civilians. 724 Israelis were injured, and that included 469 soldiers. And these are official numbers from Israel. Now, because of the questions that arose about violations of international human rights and humanitarian law during this conflict, Physicians for Human Rights Israel commissioned a fact-finding group of people, a mission to go to Gaza to find out what was really going on. Two separate teams were sent into Gaza for a total of 3 visits that occurred between the 19th of August and the 12th of November. And what they did was they got together 8 independent international medical experts, even though Israel says that we're not independent. 4 experts actually had specific expertise in the field of forensic medicine and pathology, and I was one of the forensic pathologists. The remainder were experts in emergency medicine, public health, pediatrics, health, and human rights. We were the only group granted access by Israel to enter Gaza as of November 2014. Now, our mandate was to gather evidence on these issues, as you see here, the types, causes, and patterns of injuries and attacks, the attacks that we had heard about on medical teams and facilities, the evacuation of the wounded and dead, impact of the attack on public health and their healthcare system, and then the long-term effects of these injuries on their rehabilitation, public health, and safety and displacement. So what we did was we gathered data. First of all, several of us did not initially receive our permits to go into Gaza the first several days. So we ended up going to several hospitals in the West Bank, examining patients and their injuries, talking to the families, and we created a questionnaire in order to have a uniform response. We also discussed and talked to medical teams, and we examined some of the facilities and the equipment. We again talked to families about how their wounded or dead were evacuated. We also toured a lot of the residential sites. We did examine some medical records and forensic photographic materials from the morgue of Shifa Hospital. No autopsies were performed because of religious reasons, and so the access that we had was predominantly photographs. And our findings, as you can see here, are in the 237-page document called No Safe Place. And if you go online, you can actually see it live, GazaHealthAttack.com, and there's also videos of interviews with the families. Again, one of the things that we found that there was no place that these poor Palestinians could go, and by humanitarian law that you have to allow feasible precautions to protect civilians and not combatants by giving them adequate warning of attacks. There was inadequate warning of attacks, and the majority of people interviewed said they had no prior warning of attacks. There were some telephones. They were automated telephone calls. There were flyers that were dropped from helicopters and airplanes. Also, people received SMS text, and there was also what we call knock on the roof, meaning that a small bomb would be dropped in the area to let people know they were going to drop larger bombs. Those are called knocks on the roof. People would think that the knock on the roof was actually the attack, and they would not leave because they thought it was over, and then their homes were devastated. Others said that the warnings were inconsistent. If there was a warning, often there was no attack. Other times there were severe attacks if they did get a warning. Medical personnel units are supposed to be afforded protection under international law, and all these vehicles that we saw were actually distinctively marked with medical identification, as were the healthcare workers. Their coordinates were actually given to Israel so that they would be protected. However, evidence that we saw that medical units and facilities were not protected, and some were actually direct targets. 23 healthcare workers died as a result of the conflict, 16 of those while they were on duty. 83 were injured, mostly ambulance personnel, 1 ambulance station, and 45 ambulances were damaged. And this is actually a photo that you can see several of the ambulances that were kept as tokens of the war. This young man, he was actually a paramedic that went in to help evacuate, and he had almost pelvic amputation of his right leg, and he's worried about continuing to work. This guy, his name is Yusuf, and he was actually a paramedic who's suffering significantly from PTSD. He had lost 30 pounds in about less than a month. What was really also important that we found was that there were double tap attacks on the medical teams. And let me just show you really quickly a case study from Sajia of what happens. And in this, what they do is they drop a bomb. As everyone comes to help, they drop a second bomb. Whoops, where'd it go? Come back, sorry. Let's go back. There it is. Okay, let's see if I can get that to go real quick. So one bomb is dropped, and you can see there people are calling for help. And this is actually a photographer that was killed in this attack that was filming. So that's what we call a double tap. Other associated findings, 17 hospitals were damaged or destroyed. Staff was unsafe going to work. 56 primary health care facilities were destroyed. El Wafa Rehab Hospital was completely devastated, and it was just burned to the ground. And that was the only rehab hospital in Gaza. The other thing was evacuation of the injured. What these people do, they have to actually contact the International Red Cross as an intermediary, and it usually took about 10 to 20 minutes within Gaza before that. During the conflict, the average was about 10 hours before they could evacuate patients, or it did fail completely for one six-year-old boy who was never evacuated. The routes were unsafe, and the hospitals were overwhelmed as the volume of patients and the severity of their injuries. The patients not only had severe amputations, as you can see this young kid up here who ended up dying. This young girl here, she was 19 years old. She lost about 3 inches of bone in her humerus and will have to have significant surgery done. Plus, there were a lot of burn injuries. The hospitals were overwhelmed. In the 2008-09 conflict, 5,000 were injured and 1,100 were referred outside the country. However, in this instance, only 514 were referred outside of Gaza to other places where they could get significant medical care. Our forensic findings, we analyzed 370 digital images for 75 decedents, and we interviewed families and patients, and you can see here that the injuries were caused by indiscriminate large powerful explosives destroying large swaths of residential areas, causing mass fatalities. You can see here that about a significant percent, nearly 50%, were in their homes when they were injured. Injuries were due to explosions and crush injuries. Drones and F-16s were actually used for what they call precision takeouts, so that one floor of an apartment would be damaged, but there was a lot of collateral damage. Actually, this right here is a bomb that occurred for a person who was a Hamas leader, and this material here and these buses were right next to that area. This family, their young child was in bed with them in the sleep, and she ended up having to be evacuated to a hospital for head injuries. You can see here the types of injuries that we documented: limb fractures, amputations, burns, and head injuries were significant. Again, most patients had multiple injuries. Again, you can see the fact that there are significant numbers of amputations, and they're very high. Types of weapons, we were worried about irregular weapons being used. We did not see any evidence of white phosphorus, even though the doctors in the hospital were worried about. We did actually find evidence that flechettes were used in some of the weapons, and those are actually like they're bombs that explode, and the flechettes go out and do more injury to other people. There were a lot of gas reports. There was a lot of coughing, a lot of shortness of breath when patients were discussing what happened, and we did not find any use of what's called dense inert metal explosive. We did find several things. This was actually had a Sony or a Motorola identification on it, which was interesting. Now, the other thing that I just want to mention is a long-term impact of the war is that more than 18,000 homes were destroyed and 500,000 people were displaced. 60,000 were actually living in schools at the time of September. Long-term impact of the war, there's a lot of hazardous materials, and people are actually still dying, kids especially, because they're like playing in these things. This little girl that's on the morgue table, she actually had a door and a whole area fall onto her and caused a head injury. Post-traumatic stress is huge. Everyone is suffering for it. They're all having insomnia flashbacks, especially the children. And 70% of the Gazan population is actually less than 18 of age. The other thing that we discussed with the psychiatric people at the Gaza mental health facility is the cycle of violence continues. These young people that are the head of Hamas now were actually children during the first and second intifadas. Then later they became warriors, and now they're actually in charge of the Hamas. So it's very difficult to deal with this cycle of violence. The other last thing I'm going to mention before I get to the end is that the rehabilitation issues, there is no rehab center here. They have no ability for prostheses. There are very few sidewalks. You can see the type of sidewalks there. The roads are dirt. There's no access for disabled patients. And these patients with these amputations, they live in multi-story houses, and you can see that it's very difficult because there's no elevators. And we will not go into Kuzza. So what we wanted to do is just make a recommendation in this book is that there be a transparent investigation of the Israeli government and the military, make those who are responsible for the human rights violations accountable, and that the mental health of the Gazan population needs to be discussed. And the team, as you can see there, are listed. And one thing, last thing I'm going to say is that I was on the team with Lewis Reynolds, who is from South Africa, and his comment was, "This is worse than anything I've ever seen in apartheid." Thank you very much.